Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, after 4 months of work, Fresno Unified has in its hands 16 recommendations and reams of feedback on how to keep students in school and on target to graduate. What's next? Also, the effort to provide teens with summer jobs and why the president thinks it's so important. Plus, a summer youth conference with the emphasis on health. But first, last week, the Fresno Unified School Board was presented with 16 recommendations on how to improve the district's graduation rate, said to be between 64 to 70%, depending on what statistics you examine. A task force made up of 38 people came up with the proposals. There were then a series of public hearings where parents and members of the community gave their input. And as we saw when we attended one of the meetings, participants didn't hold back.
Being respectful of time and trying to move through the agenda, it's a lot to cover. We can probably do like a final summary at the end.
They met in school cafeterias. Parents, community members, and others concerned about the large number of Fresno Unified students who don't graduate school.
I think it's great. I think it's really needed. The graduation rates in Fresno Unified are horrendous, and it's a good start to get the community involved.
Marjorie Fazio is a parent of a child who attends Fresno schools. She was among those who gathered at Jefferson Elementary School on this night for a public hearing on recommendations presented by the district's graduation task force.
I think that they are a good start in the right direction.
The 38-member panel, headed by former State Assemblyman Juan Oramula, spent months coming up with 15 recommendations aimed at increasing the number of students who stay in school and graduate. Micah Yang, executive director of Stone Soup in Fresno, is a member of the task force. She says the recommendations are just that and can be changed after the public has its say.
Tonight is an opportunity for the community to come together and provide us some insight on the recommendations that we have put together since our meeting since March.
And that's exactly what they did, breaking up in small groups and poring over each recommendation one at a time.
12, right? We're on 12.
They took their task seriously and didn't hold back. Listen as they discussed the recommendation that called on the district to help parents have high expectations of their children, hold them accountable, and to perform and behave appropriately.
With the educator or teacher being present too, saying, well, your son or daughter isn't doing well in this area, it can also be embarrassing and demeaning for the student if you have a very authoritative parent.
I want my child to be there because I want him to be held accountable as much as I am.
It will be important to coach the teachers how to facilitate that kind of conversation.
Similar discussions took place at each table as each group dissected the task force proposals.
Being that it's my first time, I'm hoping to see some progress behind it. I want to see some real action.
Parents like Cassandra Kitchen came to the meeting hoping to get someone to listen to her concerns.
Why are the teachers getting away with so much, like refusing to let children go to the restroom?
Kitchen says the district needs to have a better way to address parents' complaints.
If a parent is making a complaint with the district, we shouldn't have to wait 20 days, 40 days, and then we still don't know what happened.
There was much discussion around the issue of discipline and which students are expelled and suspended from school.
In some cases, I believe that children of color are more likely to be expelled than other children, and so they kind of get thrown by the wayside.
Pamela Young is with the Fresno branch of the NAACP, and her concerns are real. A study released this year by the Department of Education showed that African-American students are 3.5 times more likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers. It also revealed that Hispanic and Black students fare poorly under school districts' zero-tolerance policies. Many who attended the public hearings say the issue must be dealt with to meet the district's goal to keep students in school and on track to graduate.
Children need to be provided with tools to improve their behavior and not simply thrown away and barred from obtaining an education.
Now joining us to further discuss this issue, we are happy to have Juan Olramilla, who is a former assemblyman and school board trustee. He was the leader of the task force. We also have Miriam Hernandez, a recent Roosevelt High School graduate, also a member of the task force. And we also have Maricel Hernandez, and she is a youth leader for the Success Project, a group of young people who work hard to keep students in school. Thank you all for joining us this morning to discuss this important issue. Glad to have you here. First of all, Mr. Ramula, this was quite a process. It just wasn't people huddle in rooms and coming up with suggestions. I mean, there was a lot of effort put into this.
Yes, there was. I'm very proud of all the people that were involved in it. We weren't sure where it was going to go when we started because it is a pretty difficult task to try to reduce a problem that's been with us for many, many years. But I'm very pleased with the product, and I'm very pleased with the way that members of the task force and members of the community came out to give us their suggestions.
And I think one thing people also need might not be aware of. I mean, you had the public hearings, but you also received input from, I mean, you got over 100 emails. You had input from students, including at-risk students, homeless students. Why was it important to hear all of these different voices?
Well, I think everyone's voice needs to be heard. We wanted to make sure that, for example, that on the task force we had voices representing youth. We wanted to make sure that staff was represented, that parents were represented. There were several parents who were members of the task force. But it wasn't enough just for us to be diverse and to have a lot of voices within the task force. We also wanted to go out into the community and get a temperature check, kind of figure out where does a community think the problem lie and where should we be going as a task force. We also did our own research. We brought in academicians, and we tried to touch all the bases, Juanita.
Miriam, as a student, what do you think about the process? You know, there were a lot of people, naysayers, who really didn't think much of, you know, this effort. As a student and as someone who participated, what are your thoughts?
I felt like this was a huge process only because, well, it was full of effort because we were a group of different diversities of where we worked in the community. And as a student, when we got into those groups with the community and we heard their voices, I understood that, you know, it's everybody's fault. It doesn't matter if you're the principal. It doesn't matter if you're the superintendent. It doesn't matter if you're the student. Everybody wants to point fingers at one person, but in reality, we have to point fingers at ourselves because the dropout rate has to go with the families, the students, and our schools that we attend, which is something that I learned in the task force. So it was just interesting to hear the input from the members in the task force and relating those recommendations to the community and hearing their input.
You know, that's one of the things, too. And I would encourage members of the community, because all of this information is up on the district's website, even the emails from people. And so you can see, you know, you can see and read the thoughts of people who wanted to express their viewpoint on this issue. Maricelo, what did you think about the process?
I thought it was a great opportunity for the community to really get involved. You know, you hear people complaining about how the the school system isn't working, there's always trouble. And this was their opportunity for community members to be involved, for youth to really come to these meetings, these community meetings that they were having, and to really say, is this what we want? And really get a voice, what's going on? This is the problem, and this is how it could be solved.
Mr. Ramila, now these requirements, if you look at them, they put the responsibility of improving the graduation rates, as Miriam said, on everyone. Students are being told to be responsible. A lot is being asked of teachers and the school district.
Yes, and that's where we think the responsibility should lie, with everyone. With everyone.
And one of the things that, if you look at the recommendations and how they came in, and if you listen to the feedback, there was a lot of concerns that teachers and staff just really weren't hearing the concerns of both parents and students when it came to issues surrounding how children were performing in school.
Well, you know, education is a really difficult area because there's so many points of view. You know, the parents felt, to a large degree, I empathize with them. They felt that they found it hard to work with the school district. They found it hard to get information, and they wanted to partner. And sure, there's parents that don't do their part, but I think an awful lot of parents wanted to help but just didn't know how. And trying to make that connection between the schools and homes was very important, so that we can bring people together. Because for far too long, Juanita, in this community, we've played the blame game of pointing the finger. Don't blame me. It's so-and-so's fault. And until so-and-so does something, I don't have to do something. Well, I think what really got to us, to all of us on the task force, is that it's a huge problem. It has tremendous economic impact on our community. And more than that, it takes a human toll on people, on families. And what we realized is that if we're going to really be serious about finding solutions, about dramatically, not just tinkering at the edge, but dramatically reducing the dropout rate, it's going to take everyone pulling together instead of like a tug of war where everybody's pulling in opposite directions.
You know, when you ask students some of the research and data that I looked at, why they quit going to school, the survey that I looked at, it all had something to do with the school. Or they would say they missed too many days, or they just didn't like school, or they felt like they got behind, and once they got behind, they couldn't catch up. And what kind of suggestions did you get to really engage students more? What do you think, Miriam?
Well, in several recommendations, we got a lot of input stating that, you know, teachers should be more open with the students and care about them, and for all the students, not just, you know, a particular group of students, and to ensure that, you know, the teachers are always available for the students, to welcome them into a climate and environment within the class that will engage them in their education.
And Celia?
Oh.
Maricela. You know, as a member of the Success Project, because you all work a lot with students, when it comes to, as I mentioned, how do you engage students more? The students you talk to, what is it that they say they're missing in school that really kind of keeps them attuned and interested and wanting to come to school?
When we were doing our focus groups when we first started, we found out a lot of students didn't feel listened to, or that they didn't have an adult that they could go to on campus. And coming from personal experience, that one adult can make a change. It made a change in my life, and it can make a change in other students' life. And that's what we need more. We want to have staff members, faculty on campus, if they can be more, they could be that adult instead of being lucky to find that one person on campus, to have all your teachers, all the faculty members, to be that person that you can go to for help. Because a lot of students, they just want to, some students just want to vent, or they want to have fun. But I think that when they come to school, they come to get away from their problems.
And one of the things that you see in this is really more resources for teachers and more training for teachers, because they are having to be all things to all people, because so many of our children are coming from disadvantaged homes.
That's true. The students of today are not like the students of 30 years ago. And we have to change our teaching practices to be effective to reach all of the students, because we cannot afford to waste lives and to see people dropping out, particularly to the extent that we have here in the Central Valley.
And this is a time we'd like to give our audience the opportunity to weigh in, to call in. Those of you who have been following this effort to improve the Fresno Unified School District's graduation rates, what did you think about the process yourselves from what you've heard as far as having a task force and meeting and coming up with these recommendations? We'd like to hear from you. You can call 800-224-8989 or 559-275-9989, or you can email us at talk@kbpr.org. Now, one of the issues, and it's something that I know the Success Project worked on, because you all did your own survey and study, and that has to do with the district's discipline policies and the high number of suspensions and expulsions. And if you have a high number of suspension and expulsions, then you have kids who are not graduating. What were some of the findings from the task force when it came to the whole issue, the discipline issue, Mr. Aramula?
Well, you know, discipline is in the eye of the beholder, I think. First of all of us want a classroom environment that is conducive to learning, where you don't have a lot of disruptions, where, you know, you don't have a student who is causing problems. And what we would like is that when there are discipline issues, that they're resolved in a way that results in the student learning from his or her experience, learning what they did wrong, correcting the behavior, and then going back into the class as quickly as possible. Sometimes what we've seen is an attitude that I don't want so-and-so in my class. They don't belong here, and I'm going to do everything I can to get him out of my class, rather than trying to figure out how can we resolve the issue that led to the misbehavior and try to bring the student in. You know, because every time you change schools, every time you miss school, you start falling behind. And that was one of the contributors to dropping out, not being on grade level, for example, in terms of reading or receiving too many failing grades, losing credits in high school. So we want students to be in the classroom as much as possible every day, learning with their teacher. And when misbehavior occurs, correct the problem, but then bring the student back so that learning can continue.
Miriam and Maricela, I know for both of you, this was a huge issue as a student.
Yes, definitely. So recommendation number 8 is the one that the Success Project felt very strongly about, because, you know, it's a restorative discipline system that helps kids learn from their mistakes, connect kids with the supports that they need to stay in school and on target to graduate. And we just feel that this also gives everyone a voice to hear their story and to be part of the problem and to find better solutions that we'll get the students back into the classrooms and to learn everything that they need to learn in their schools.
Let me just go ahead and read requirement or recommendation number 8. It says, the district's discipline system must restore healthy interactions, help participants learn from their mistakes, and connect students and adults with the supporters or the supports they need to keep all students in school and on target to graduate. And you all are saying there needs to be more resources going towards implementing this whole discipline system.
Yes, because some of the students who are getting suspended were getting suspended for some minor issues. And
you know, why don't you go through some of those? Because I am somewhat familiar with the Success Project and the work that you all did. And you all did an extensive study. And what were some of the reasons you all came up with or found from students as far as some of the reasons they were being suspended or disciplined?
So for the past couple of years, we've been – Success Project has been involved – has been active since – for 3 years now. And we first started looking at the research and data, and we saw that a lot of suspension and expulsion rates were really high. And so we felt strongly to do something about it. So we wanted to know why. And so then we conducted focus groups, and we talked to students, parents, and community members also. And we found from the students that, again, they weren't being listened to, and that some of the students, like, felt like their teachers really didn't want them there. Like, they didn't feel engaged in the classroom, and the teacher just wanted to kick them out. And so some of the students were probably just going through just a hard time in their life, because in a teenager right now, being a teenager, it's like a hard enough going through it because you're growing up, and you have to make decisions. So they're going through a lot in this phase of their life, and maybe they need just someone. They've wanted someone to talk to, or they needed they just wanted help, but they didn't know about resources, and all they felt like they were just a victim, or just that they were just being picked on.
Well, you know, I understand what both of you are saying, but you know, you are going to have some people who say, and those parents of students who go to school to learn and they sit in classrooms where other students are being disruptive, and they're going to say, look, if a kid isn't there to learn, and if they get out of line, then they need to face the consequences. So are there consequences with this model of discipline?
Can I say something on
that? Yeah, go ahead.
I feel that in the actual recommendations, it's saying learn from their mistakes. So this is holding the student accountable. And if you look at the past, you see that if you get suspended, you get sent home. That's has been the traditional method of just suspension instead of going back into the class. And there's really no lessons learned. It's just you get sent home, and hopefully you learn your lesson by the next day you come in. So this recommendation number 8, it really gives a student opportunity to see what they did wrong and how they can make it better.
Okay.
Yeah, and Juanita, I want to assure parents that we are not trying to make life more difficult for teachers. You know, one of my sons is a high school teacher. Another just got accepted into a teacher preparation program. And I would like for them to have a classroom environment where they can reach all of the students. But some of the students in Fresno schools are coming to school with some really serious problems. And it's hard to leave your family problems at the school gate. You know, your dad just got sent to prison. Your mom lost her job. You don't know how the rent's going to be paid. You know, all of these things are going on in addition to what's going on in the schools that sometimes cause students to act out. And what we are trying to get across is let's solve the underlying problem that maybe contributed or caused the misbehavior rather than just punishing somebody for something that they're struggling with themselves. And you know, as was pointed out, currently the solution is, okay, we're going to send you home where you have more free time, where you're not learning, and if you need more supervision and adult interaction, you're not going to get that. And you're going to come back and you're going to have missed a number of days of school. You're going to be even further behind. And it just snowballs after a while. What we're trying to say is let's come out of this in a healthy way that restores the student to the classroom and in a better position so that the teacher can teach.
And what you're talking about is something that is going to take a huge effort. And perhaps not just Fresno Unified, but other districts kind of got in the mode of the way they suspend and expel students because it was just quicker and easier. And what you're talking about is something that's really going to take some revamping of the whole system.
We have no easy answers. We have some difficult answers that are going to be hard to implement, but we think this is the best way to go.
And one thing, you know, when we sit here and we talk, and we're focusing on Fresno Unified, but I think there's something we really need to point out, and the fact that our low graduation rates and high dropout rates, it is not only a statewide problem, but it is a nationwide problem, and there are some real consequences to us as a country because of the low number of students we have to graduate. Let me just read something here, that information I came up with, and I think is statewide. It says, if the current trends persist in 2025, only 35% of working-age adults in California will have a BA degree. And at that time, 40% of the jobs are going to require at least a BA degree. So what they're saying, this is going to result in a less productive economy, lower income for the residents, less tax revenue for the state, which we're already experiencing, and more people needing social service programs. So when you look at that kind of information, you see why this is an important issue for not just Fresno Unified, but other school districts that are facing similar problems across the state, that they have to address this because it does impact everybody.
And you're right. The dropouts, you know, they may be a little higher, a little lower, depending what community you live in. But, you know, someone asked me when I started this, they said, what's the real dropout rate? And I said, it's too high. It doesn't matter if it's 68 or 66 or 70% graduation rate. That still means we have a large percentage of our students that are not even getting a basic high school education, much less going on to further their education in higher education. So our economy is going to require increasing numbers of well-educated people. And in communities like Fresno and throughout the Central Valley, it becomes even more important that we educate our minority students because they are going to be the majority and they are going to be running things. They're going to be running our government, our economy, and we better make sure for our own sake, for our generation, that we prepare our students well. And it is hard work. There are no easy answers, but we think that the youth voice, along with parents and staff and community, has come up with a good set of recommendations that we now hope the district begins to implement.
So now, after coming up with the recommendations, what you're saying now, it's in the district's hands. They have to find a way to implement this.
Well, we were citizens, private citizens, students, retirees like myself, who came together to come up with these recommendations. We are not the school board. We are not paid staff. And so, yes, the day-to-day work of implementing the recommendations will be, to a large extent, with the school district. But I also want to stress it's the larger community. It's not just the schools. You know, we try to reach out and say we need to involve the county of Fresno. We need to involve the housing authority. We need to involve community-based organizations. Everybody has a piece to play in this, and the school district seems to be willing to implement these recommendations. They asked for the creation of this task force, and I think they will take the lead on implementing as much as they can within their jurisdiction. But it's going to be all of us, I think, that have to step up to the plate and fill in some of those other gaps.
I think when you look at the process and the fact that it was so public and that a lot of the information has been published and the district has put all of this information up online, including, you know, the emails and the feedback that they got from the public and other areas, that there really will have to be some follow through on this.
I certainly hope so.
Let me ask the students, from your perspective, where would you like to see it start?
I would definitely like to see it start outside of school because, you know, a lot of people forget that we need to understand the community that the students are coming from. You know, a lot of the teachers, you know, they don't live in the community that we live in. They don't see day and night what we go through. And it would just be nice to see that feeling when the community is getting better. That way when the students go to school, they feel more alive and energetic to know that, you know, there's better outcomes coming about in their community, and that, you know, they don't have so many problems going into school, and that they're just ready and set to learn.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Miriam, but when a student, it would be nice when a teacher can understand where a student is coming from, but also this could be just starting with all of us holding each other accountable, that we all are part of creating a solution. Again, like, change is never easy, and so creating positive change within our community, within our school, it's going to be a collaborative effort, and I just want to make sure that we all are on board, and we all hold each other accountable to making this positive change.
And one of the things that you both mentioned, and it's something that whenever we talk about trying to address a problem in Fresno Unified, or not just Fresno Unified, but in our community, it really is something that starts out in the community, because Fresno as a whole, when you look at our statistics, you know, as a county and a city, you know, they really don't stack up well either when we look at, you know, just our poverty rate and our teen pregnancy rate and our health issues, all these other issues, our jobs rate, that these are things as a community, you guys are saying, we need to address, and that will also impact education.
Very true. Students are not responsible for the unemployment rate, for the poverty rate. You know, as we've seen from studies, Fresno has some of the highest, if not the highest, rate of concentrated poverty of any urban city in the nation. These were not problems that were created overnight. And yes, if we had a better community where parents earn more, then I think our scores would go up and our graduation rate would go up. Well, we have a number of problems, Juanita, but there's no sense pointing fingers. There's no sense wringing our hands and saying, gee, we can't do anything. The problems are too big. We think there is a solution. We think there is a better way to get a healthy community, a stronger community, a more taxpaying community that relies less on social services. But it does mean adults who work within the system have to change some of the practices to make things work better. It means we have to reach out and involve partners that we traditionally have not worked with. For example, schools need to reach out to parents, whether they speak English or not, whether they come from the wrong side of the tracks or not. Parents want to help, and there's no sense saying, well, we're just going to wait until they get educated before we work with them. You know, you have to take people where they're at. And that's what we're trying to do. I think the students' voice is extremely helpful because of what they contributed, their insights. But in addition to that, their energy, their enthusiasm, and their willingness to stick around and make sure that this gets implemented. I think it's as much for our sake as it is for theirs, though.
And that's one thing about the task force. When you look at the 38 people who made up this task force, I mean, really no one group was left out at all. And I know when I went to the public hearing, what I witnessed were people who were definitely engaged in the process and believed that what they had to say was really important. And for them to feel that way, the process must have to be working the way that it was for people really to feel so comfortable to speak up and speak their minds.
We wanted everybody to speak up. We wanted everybody not only to speak up, but we wanted them to know that we were listening.
What is the next step? I know you said now you all have done your duty. You've turned it over to the school board. But do you think this task force is and the group of people who came up with this are still going to be involved in some way?
Well, I believe there is a need, as witnessed in one of our recommendations, that there be quarterly meetings, or at least semi-annual, if not quarterly meetings, of a group of individuals to act as an oversight board, to evaluate the progress, to evaluate how well the recommendations are being implemented. I think that's extremely important, so we don't let up. And knowing that there is going to be an evaluation, I think will make people want to move even faster.
And you too. I know For you, Maryam, you're going to be here locally when you continue your education. And, I mean, you're going to be leaving high school, but is this something you still – I mean, I know this is very, you know, close to your heart. Are you still going to stay involved in this?
Yes, as a passion of this for myself, you know, I still have 7 siblings who are still Fresno Unified School District students. So, you know, I'm still going to look out, like, from, you know, what they're seeing, their perspectives and hearing their voice. And also, you know, still attending board meetings and being involved with Californians for Justice and the success team and, you know, just making sure that I'm aware of what's going on still, even though I will be in college. I still want to have a say and I still want to participate in any way that I can to have a better education for all students.
Imani Setup, what is the next step for the Success Project? You know, they spent a lot of time. I know you guys did a lot of research mm-hmm. on the proposal and the data that you put forth. Is this something this group is going to continue to monitor?
We're actually going to have a meeting next week to discuss this exact same topic. So it's something that I personally feel that we should continue to make sure that that just the implementation of these recommendations are being implemented, and the ones that are really necessary are being prioritized, especially when it comes to some recommendations, especially recommendation number 8. I feel like it's important to prioritize it and make sure that when the school board is implementing it, that some of these top issues are prioritized.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us this morning. It's been a great discussion. Of course, like everyone else, we are going to follow the issue and see what comes next from the Fresno Unified School District School Board. And to both of our young guests, Maryam, who's heading off to college, and Monticella, thank you both so much. You're both going to make great future leaders here in Fresno. So I'd like to thank again Juana Ramula, the chair of the Fresno Unified Graduation Task Force, Maryam Hernandez, a recent Roosevelt High School graduate and also a member of the task force, and Maricela Hernandez, a youth leader for the Success Project. Thank you all for joining us this morning, and you are listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Kaiser Permanente Fresno and Cahuilla Delta Medical Center.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. Well, the graduation season is here, and many students will be flooding the job market looking for a summer job. But those in California may have a tougher time when it comes to finding work. The state has the highest teen unemployment rate in the country at 36%. While those numbers are disheartening, there are still opportunities out there, thanks to companies that see summer jobs as more than a way for teens to earn some extra cash. Grabbing a summer job at your local fast food restaurant or shopping mall was a given for many teenagers, but that was before the economic downturn. The slow economy has definitely impacted their ability to find work.
It's really tough because we're competing with graduate students and just basically anyone who actually has a degree.
19-year-old DeBosch Lohr just finished up his 2-year program at Fresno City College and will be transferring to Fresno State in the fall. He's just beginning his search for a summer job.
Those students that are just now starting their job search are a little bit late.
Fresno City College job developer Charlazette Day says it's best to start that job search in April before school is out. But Day tells students not to be discouraged because there are still jobs out there.
Young people really just need to know where to look.
I first tried going to the mall, the different malls here in Fresno, and I also tried going to different restaurants and fast food places. And then I resorted to going to online because a lot of the applications were online.
99% of jobs are online today. But going door to door, as 18-year-old Angelique Poole did, is also a good approach. It allowed her to make contact with the employer.
And they also let me leave resumes, so I always brought at least 10 copies of resumes when I go out job searching.
Day says it will take a lot of hard work for young people to find work this summer, but the payoff is worth it. A study by the National Bureau of Economic Research showed that teens who work part-time had a greater likelihood of earning more money in the future. The president of the United States also sees it as an important issue, saying summer work helps students learn important job skills. In January, President Barack Obama announced a private-public partnership urging companies to hire teens this summer. Locally, PG&E stepped up and provided the Boys and Girls Club of Fresno County with a $200,000 grant.
So with this $200,000 grant, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Fresno County was able to provide some really extensive job training to about 180 youth and then fund, through that grant, 50 summer jobs that last 9 weeks.
In all, 18 companies are participating in the program and providing jobs for these young people. Duncan Enterprises is one of the companies. President Larry Duncan says the company has been a long-term supporter of the Boys and Girls Club of Fresno County and believes in the organization's mission to enable all young people to reach their full potential as productive, caring, and responsible citizens.
Productive citizens means they enter the workforce. And a lot of kids don't have easy opportunities to do that. So this program, I think, is very exciting in giving kids their first chance to experience work life and the value that can come out of that for them and their future families.
18-year-old Rami Abanamas is one of the 50 young people who earned a job. The Clovis West grad says going through the training taught him valuable skills.
It gave us more experience. It taught us how to do resumes, you know, communication skills, professional skills.
Rami plans to go to community college at the Willow International Campus in Clovis. He says money earned from his job will help him with school.
I was extremely excited. I was happy, you know, just knowing that I'm going to be able to get that experience.
And in the tradition of the Boys and Girls Club, Rami wants to help other young people. He says he will take some of his summer earnings and put it toward a scholarship to help another young person at the Pinedale Boys and Girls Club. Boy, what do you think about that? You know, he's going to take some of the money that he earns from his summer job, money that he really needs, and wants to start a scholarship for other young people. Joining me now is Diane Carbray with the Boys and Girls Club of Fresno County. And first of all, Diane, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Sure.
But first, about how many young people does the Boys and Girls Club serve now? So we can get an indication of just, you know, your reach when it comes to young people in this community.
Yeah, it's really extensive. We have over 12,000 students that come to the Boys and Girls Club. They're ages 6 to 18. We are the largest serving youth organization in Fresno County. They come every day after school from 2:30 to 8, but taking care of 12,000 kids in various education and career programs is really rewarding.
I know. A lot of people just really enjoy doing that. And let's talk about the jobs angle. What kind of job prospects were a lot of these young people looking at before PG&E provided the grant?
I don't think they had the training that we was provided through the grant. Our staff at seven of our clubs were able to put the students through a 10-week session where they learned how to fill out a resume, how to do a job application, how to set goals, how to interview. They learned about personal hygiene and what it takes to get along with everyone in the workplace. So I don't think they had set their sights very high. Probably were looking mostly at menial jobs as opposed to being able to go into production and places like Red Cross. To be able to work for the Grizzlies, that doesn't happen very often. So I think their sights were set higher.
And also, when I talked to Rami, he said, he admitted, you know, somebody like me, he would rarely get the opportunity to get a summer job.
Well, especially in this economy where there's so many there's so many people that are overqualified looking for positions. So kids coming out of high school don't necessarily get the best shot at it. And this really gave them a leg up because we were able to pair the jobs with the students.
Now, there was also a huge effort to match the young people up with their interest. It wasn't just let's get them all in a room and here's a job and let's put this kid here. There was a real effort to find out what they were interested in.
Right. When they filled out their job application, just as if they were going to an employer, they checked their main areas of interest, whether it was medical or want to work in a hair salon, want to work in production. They would check those, and then we tried to pair them up with the job mentors that we had lined up.
And when I talked to Mr. Duncan, he talked about when you look at the benefits of young people having summer jobs, that, you know, he's saying one day the young person who's going to work for them this summer could come back and be an employee.
Yeah, that's perfect. They get the on-the-job training, and as they get older, they'll get out of high school, get out of college, and hopefully that, you know, everybody remembers their first job. You know, remember what you know, I was flipping burgers in Kansas, you know. So it's just, it's a great opportunity for them.
But, you know, because you talked about what you were doing, but what we have seen because of the economy, there were a lot of young people who were just missing out on that opportunity, something that you take for granted, a summer job, you know, working at the local fast food restaurant or working at the mall.
Right. You just assume that that's going to be available to
you. But for the last 2 years, according to statistics, a lot of kids just did not have that opportunity. And I think what they were saying about the importance of this, they were really missing out on important skills.
Right. Especially the socialization, just of being in a workplace and managing conflict. And, you know, you don't always like the person that you're working next to. And it's a really important thing to learn as a young person that you have to be able to get along in the workplace. And not only the be able to take a paycheck home, just the job skills that you learn. It's really important.
Now, how is this going to work? It's my understanding that the paycheck will come from the Boys and Girls Club, and the young people are going to be evaluated on their work.
Right, right. Every Friday, they'll turn their timesheets in, and the mentor at the job site will turn in a small evaluation of how they did that week so that we can help them work on any skills they need to develop. And then they'll receive a paycheck a week later, just like we all do in the workforce. The Boys and Girls Club will write the checks through the grant that the PG&E Education Summer Jobs Program has given us.
What are your thoughts when companies like PG&E, and there were a lot of other companies who stepped up this summer as well to provide summer jobs for young people, but how does something like that not only benefit what you do at the Boys and Girls Club, but the entire community?
First of all, it adds education experience to young people that's direly needed now. It also adds money to the economy. We were fortunate to pair up with PG&E, and I think it's because we have a reputation of being able to come through and perform and deliver the outcomes, especially with grants that are like this. And we have the facilities where the kids can come and take this job training. And I think that was really important that our infrastructure was available to PG&E to take advantage of. So it was a natural partnership that really panned out well for both the community and the kids.
Well, let's hope it happens again next summer because this was great. And there, I had a chance to meet some of these young people, some great young people.
Yeah.
And I know you were busy this morning, so I just want to thank you for coming in and spending some time with us.
All right.
Diane.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio. Our commentary series, The Moral Is, continues today as Andrew Fila explores what happens when the principles of religious liberty and the separation of church and state meet in contemporary culture.
Gay marriage is one of the wedge issues this election year. President Obama's newly evolved position on same-sex marriage appears as a response to the voters in North Carolina. All this political gamesmanship obscures the fact that gay marriage is fundamentally an issue of religious liberty. When opponents of gay marriage say they are trying to defend the sanctity of marriage, they use religious language that should raise a red flag for those of us who are committed to the First Amendment and to the idea of separation of church and state. In a free society, the government should not make laws that favor a religious notion of marriage. In the long run, tolerance benefits religious people. There once were laws that prohibited Christians from marrying Jews. Adulterers were once forced to wear the dreaded scarlet letter. And Mormons were once persecuted for their beliefs about polygamy. We've come a long way. We should each remember that there are some people who will not like our choices about marriage or God. But that's the way it goes with love and religion. We can't help but judge each other's choices. Judgment is okay as long as the law remains neutral. Tolerance does not mean that people have to like who you marry or the God you worship. But the state should leave us alone to make our own sexual, familial, and religious choices. It should also leave us alone to judge each other, argue, and criticize, so long as that criticism remains private and civil. Some people mistake tolerance for relativism, as if tolerance is based upon a lack of commitment to moral truth. But tolerance, like the First Amendment, is grounded in a deep commitment to liberty. And liberty is good for each of us, gay or straight, religious or non-religious. If you enjoy the freedom you have to pursue your own ideas about love and religion, then you should extend that freedom to others in a spirit of fairness and reciprocity. There are limits to liberty and toleration. We should not tolerate rape, forced marriage, or child marriage, since these violate liberty. But outside of such obvious limits, the state should leave adults alone to make decisions about spiritual and marital well-being. Gay marriage is a symbolic issue for those who value religious liberty. At a time when intolerant religions are growing in power across the globe, we should celebrate the American ideal of keeping the law neutral when it comes to who we marry or how we worship. For The Moral Is, this is Andrew Fiala.
The commentary series The Moral Is was produced by Valley Public Radio in association with the Bonner Center for Character Education at California State University, Fresno. The opinions expressed are those of the writer and not necessarily Valley Public Radio. Send us your comments with an email. The address is talk@kvpr.org.
Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. Well, this weekend, a summer youth conference all about improving the health of young people here to tell us more is Yolanda Randles with the West Fresno Family Resource Center and Adrian Carter, who is a project coordinator. Thanks so much, ladies, for coming in this morning. Now, Yolanda, this is a two-day event. And you are bringing a premier double Dutch team to Fresno to get more kids motivated to be active, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually part of a project that we have. It's called Healthy Habits in Progress. And Adrian Carter is our staff project coordinator on this project. And really the whole idea of the program is around obesity prevention. And so, again, this is a two-day event. On Friday, we actually have a youth clinic.
Yes.
We have a special invitation for selected youth in our community to participate in a Double Dutch clinic in West Fresno. And so we actually are bringing out the national Double Dutch team from New York, and they are going to be teaching the girls, you know, proper and boys, proper technique and jumping, turning, counting. And Double Dutch is just a fun way to exercise.
When you think about it, you know, we think of it as jumping rope, but it's a huge skill, and some of these teams are just phenomenal when you watch them.
Yes, absolutely. It's an international program, and every year in October there's a huge competition. Ideally, our goal was we're trying to get a team out of Fresno to compete. So we're hoping that, you know, this will be the start of something great. You know, in addition to exercising, Double Dutch also teaches self-esteem. It teaches team building. And again, it's fun. It's a fun way to just get out and exercise.
And one of the things you talked about really assists you is to help address the obesity issue. And still here in Fresno County, when it comes to childhood obesity, we still have some very high numbers, don't we, to deal with?
Yeah. Yes, we do. we've been going out to different locations, the West Fresno Boys and Girls Club, Bigby Villa Community Center, the Mariella Brown Center, and also Sunset Center. And we've been teaching on healthy habits and progress. And what we do there is we teach the children how to prepare healthy meals and to go home and to show their parents. We teach them how to read labels so they can see the content of sugar and fat in an item they may purchase at the grocery store. And just on yesterday, we had a healthy habits dinner as a family at Bigby Villa Community Center. And we had we served the children brown rice and black beans and with a wheat pita with rotisserie chicken and avocado as the healthy fat.
So you're like really introducing not only healthy foods, but for some of these young people, new foods into their diets to get them to think about a new way of eating.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the obesity situation, some of the stats that I have is that 31% of teens ages 12 to 17 or one in three children ages 9 and 11 are at risk or they're already overweight. Mm-hmm. And some of that really has to do with just the proliferation of fast food restaurants in their neighborhoods, but also just the way they cook food at home.
Yes, and basically how they were parents were taught to cook, you know, back in the old days, they still incorporate that type of cooking. But what we're trying to do is reach the children. So when they're in the grocery store with their parents, they can say, Mom or Dad, you know, let's try something different as far as, you know, the brown rice. That's something that's really new to the children. And so they have taken on a taste for that. And so a lot of the kids are saying, you know, we're going home and telling Mom, you know, instead of buying this, go ahead and get the brown rice.
And tell us a little bit more about the event Friday and Saturday. Have young people already registered for this? And what about the public participation?
Yes, there is a registration process for Friday. And unfortunately, Friday is, you know, we're limiting the number of youth participants because we really want the team to have a hands-on approach with our kids. And the idea, too, is that it's sort of be a train-a-trainer. So we're partnering with City Parks and Recreation for their community, their leaders to come to get trained on how to do Double Dutch. And on Saturday, you know, Saturday is our annual Juneteenth celebration. So just after the Juneteenth parade will be our Healthy Habits and Progress Summer Youth Conference. And so the Double Dutch team will be performing at the health conference. And so all is invited to come to the health conference, and that's going to be held at Hinton Center, 2385 South Fairview in West Fresno, and that starts at 11:30, just after the parade. But at the Healthy Habits in Progress conference, we're going to have a speaker present on Rethink Your Drink. Again, the Double Dutch is going to be performing, but I think one of the most exciting things that we're going to have is that we're actually going to be breaking the youth into different groups. So we're going to have one group working on a poster contest from their perspective. What is healthy habits in progress? And so they're going to create a poster. There's going to be another group that's going to be putting together a skit on healthy habits in progress. And then there's going to be another group that's going to be learning Beyonce's Let's Move, which is part of the Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign, mm-hmm. Which is an exercise kind of dance routine. And all of this is going to be happening on this Saturday, June 16th at 11:30 at Hinton Center in West Fresno.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you both for coming and letting the public know more about this. Great weekend to be out. Thank you, Yolanda Rondles. Mm-hmm. With the West Fresno Resource Center and Adrienne Carter, the project coordinator there. And I'm Juanita Stevenson. I'd like to thank all of you for joining this morning for a Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.